At 27 years old, Daisy Johnson is the youngest author ever to have been shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. Her book, Everything Under, is a spooky and sometimes chilling story about a young woman who was abandoned by her mother when she was a teenager. Gretel is now looking after her mother, who has dementia, and feels compelled to find out what led to their separation. However, like the monster that lives in the river, the bonnock, some things are best left undisturbed. Daisy joined me down the line from her home in Oxford. Daisy Johnson, welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me. Really good to be here.
Did it come as a huge surprise to you to be shortlisted for the Booker Prize?
Yes. being longlisted was surprise enough. And then, yeah, being shortlisted was an enormous surprise. Very exciting, but quite a strange experience.
And this is your debut novel, isn't it? It's a follow-up to a collection of short stories called Fen. Are you a bit sick and tired of being labelled the youngest ever shortlisted author for the Man Booker Prize?
Yeah, I think there are more exciting things about the list than my being young. Obviously, it's very exciting for me, having my debut novel shortlisted. But I do think there are more things to talk about than that.
One of those things is, at the end of the book, you acknowledge your debt to the Greek playwright Sophocles. And actually, there's a couple of books in this year's shortlist that owe quite a debt to Greek mythology. Why do you think we've got a renewed interest in British literature at the moment with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's been a really good year of retellings and of sort of looking back. And I think it's maybe because these are such universal stories. You know, they're set such a long time ago, but even now they're very relevant to what's happening in the world. I also think, particularly for me, the reason I love retellings is because it's an act of destruction. It's, destroying something and then rebuilding it, which I've always found really interesting.
Also, I did wonder if, as the title of the book implies, you're looking for the betrayal, the terrible act that happened in the past and is being played out in current generations. Is that maybe a millennial trope, do you think?
Oh, interesting. I've never thought of it that way. But certainly I think it's a book about trauma and how trauma comes back around, and I suppose about whether we can forgive.
Do you think there is a lot to forgive the older generations to your own for? Maybe betrayals of a political nature or spending all the money and leaving you guys in debt?
Yeah, I suppose there is. I try and not think about it that way. You know, I think we're sort of all in it together now. And that there's not, you know, as much as my book's looking back, I think there's also, it's really important to just, you know, look forward and look now and, you know, work out how we can get ourselves out of this mess.
Gretel, your protagonist, is a lexicographer. She's looking for the meaning and history in words. And she displays that very much also in her relationship with her mother. There's a need to understand what's happened to her, why she's been put in care, the family history. And yet there's also a horror at turning over the stone and seeing what lies underneath.
Yes, I think she's a really interesting character. I really enjoyed writing her. And when I, she wasn't a lexicographer to begin with. And then when I decided that was what she was going to do, it really made sense, because it's a book about how the language we speak makes us the people we are. And when she was younger, they created a language, and that's made her into this person who, you know, is always wants to know but can't quite stand to, you know, she's a loner, she's isolated.
And it's also a study in inversion, that Gretel is now the carer for her mother, who is in the early stages of dementia, which is the inversion of the mother who should have been looking after the daughter.
Yeah, and I think she feels that really strongly, that, you know, a couple of times throughout the book she says, this is not what's supposed to happen. Parents aren't supposed to leave their children. Parents are supposed to look after, they're supposed to look after their children. It's not supposed to be the other way around. And I think she's happy to look after her mother, but she does feel betrayed. You know, illogically, she feels betrayed also by her mother becoming sick. And it's not a relationship that luckily I've personally experienced. So it's something that I had to research a lot. There's a really good book by Iris Murdoch's husband about what it was like when she got dementia. And it's such a complicated relationship, I think, because this person, you know, who you love is someone different.
And yet, I suppose, under everything, that degeneration, that loss of parents to the child is what is going to happen to all of us. It's somewhat like original sin. It's there in the background. It's just sometimes we don't turn over the stone to see what's there because it's too frightening.
Yeah, that's right. There's something mythic about it, I suppose, in that way that, yeah, everything is circular. And I think that by the end of the book, Gretel has realised that and has, to some extent, come to peace with that.
It makes a fantastic audiobook. Were you involved at all in the recording of it and the choosing of the narrator?
I wasn't. I'm really excited to listen to it, actually. A couple of friends have listened to it and said it's really, really great.
Did you read the book out aloud to yourself?
Initially in my head, but then especially in later drafts, I think it's really important to read out loud. This book in particular is a lot about, you know, the sounds of words and the sound of the landscape, the sound of the water. So it was really important to get the right rhythm in the sentences and to get the sort of flow of it.
You say flow. It's a book that is centred around water. They lived on a canal boat. The Bonarch, the creature that travels by water, that's underneath the surface, is very much central to the plot. And also your first collection of stories, Fen, was very much water-based. What is it about water that fascinates you?
It's hard to say. It's such an unconscious thing. But so I grew up around the Fens, which is this sort of strange landscape, which was drained to become farmland. So I think in the Fens, there's always this feeling of water once having been there. And perhaps it was that, you know, has put this interest of water into me. The water in everything under is different. It's, you know, it's river water, it's canal water, it's murky, there's things hidden in there. And I think that's what I really loved about writing about water for this book, is that just that idea that there could be anything underneath the surface, and that, you know, the human world is kind of, it can't control the water. The water has a life of its own.
So is there a water theme to whatever you're working on next?
Interestingly, so it's by the sea, but the water isn't quite as important. There's still bits of it. It still threads throughout, but it's not as present as it is in Everything Under and Fen.
Well, I hope that being shortlisted for the Man Booker means that a lot more people are going to dip into Everything Under. Are you excited for the ceremony?
Really excited, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
And have you read the competition?
I have. I've just finished the last of the books, which was The Overstory. Yeah, it's been one of the best things about it, actually, is just sitting down and working my way through. And they're really fantastic. I've really enjoyed them.
Well, I hope the night is great fun for you. I suppose I have to be impartial, but I will wish you as much luck as everybody else. And Daisy Johnson, thank you so much for being a guest on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much.
Everything Under by Daisy Johnson is available in Braille, giant print, and as a talking book from the RNIB Library.